Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am Cody, and today we're going to continue our May theme of nostalgia with 80s action movies. I have picked some of my favorites, some lesser known ones, but they're still pretty awesome in my mind. So today's episode is going to be about Highlander. Highlander is easily one of the cheesiest on my list for this month, but it is pretty fantastic. It is ridiculous. It's got some of the worst acting and some of the worst special effects you can imagine, but it was 1986, so there wasn't a whole lot you could do. If you don't know what Highlander is a series, which wasn't meant to be a series, by the way. It was supposed to be a one-off movie, and you could tell because the sequel, Highlander 2, was very different. So there's Highlander, Highlander 2, The Quickening. You have Highlander 3, The Sorcerer. You have Endgame, The Search for Vengeance, and then, of course, The Source. Not all of them starring all the same actors. You had crossover, if you ever remember. They did a TV show based on the Highlander show, or the Highlander series, where it was the Connor was played by somebody else. I'm trying to remember his name right now. Someone's probably yelling at me, like, oh, you can't remember his name. Wasn't Christopher Lambert, because it was the other guy that played him. I'm going to find it in a second. Adrian Paul. There we go. That's his name. He was in the TV show as well as the last movie they made, he played Duncan MacLeod instead of Connor MacLeod, I should say. So I did say that. The biggest thing about this is the TV show was pretty awesome. It was borderline terrible, but it was pretty spectacular in its own right. So Duncan MacLeod was of the Cloud, the Clan MacLeod. He's like the grandnephew, I think, of Duncan or of Connor. I can't remember what it was. It's been a long time since. But we're not talking about that today. We're talking about the first Highlander movie, and why it's awesome. So the reason it's awesome is because there's plenty of sword fighting. And the story is pretty cool. It's a very dark tale. So, again, if you don't know what this movie is about, so Connor MacLeod was born in 1829, I think they said, or 1519 or something like that. I think is when he was born in the Highlands of Scotland. When he came to age, there was a battle, going on. He, was the son of the chief. It's not really explained so much in this. He's Connor MacLeod, so his last name's MacLeod. And his family's, you know, the people who run it. So he's stricken down in battle. They think he's going to die because he's mortally wounded. The next day he wakes up just fine. No wound, no gaping hole through him anymore that a broadsword had left. And everyone decides that he's in league with the devil, and they beat him and then exile him. And so they were going to burn him at the stake or burn him alive, but if they could even. but his uncle basically convinced them to let him go. We'll start at the top of the movie. So who's in this movie, you may ask? Well, guess what? I'm going to tell you right now. stars Christopher Lambert. Yes, that Christopher Lambert. It has Clancy Brown as the villain, and it has Sean Connery as the mentor to Connor McLeod. So this is where it kind of gets weird. So Sean Connery plays a character whose name is Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez. Yes, I know what that sounds like. So he wasn't born with that name. He was born Takne in Egypt in 1896 BC. He became a mortal after being run down by an out-of-control cart in the streets of his city. Not a great way of going out, but that's where he came about. He basically lived through his life after he became immortal. Lived his life, went through many, many centuries. Again, 1896 BC, so before Christ. And he lived all the way out through, and he basically took it upon himself to train other immortals, because he believed against what all the others believe, especially the villain of the movie, that there should only be one. He believes that there should be multiples. He does know that eventually it's going to happen where the power is going to go through. It's a very weird story. They don't really go into it too much, why he makes friends with people. But he believes that they should work together and make the world better, because they do live forever and all that fun stuff. So he finds Connor after he's been exiled. He's been now living on his own with a new lady for at least 5 years, I believe. And when he's approached, or when Connor's approached by him, he tells him what's happening, and he's like, well, that makes no sense, so you're insane. Well, he decides to show him, somehow it talks him into going on a boat, holding weights on a bar, on a beam, even though he can't swim and he's afraid of water. So eventually he falls in. He says he's screaming, he sinks to the bottom, realizes he's not dying because he can breathe underwater, doesn't need to breathe underwater. He starts chopping up plants, and he walks his way back to shore. The one thing they don't do exceedingly well, it's part of the mythology of the Highlander, the mortals that are in this. And really there's no like one direct way you can go and find all this. The TV show tried to nail it down a little bit more, but the second movie really set the TV show came out way after, by the way. I mean, I could probably tell you right now when it came out. Yeah, it was, they were, I can't remember, I can find it in a minute. So, I'm going to go into the sequel another month. I have another month planned of sequels only, and I'll explain that when it comes to that month. I want to spoil it now, it's fun. So, Sean Connery's character, well, I'll start from the beginning. I skipped ahead a little bit. So the movie opens in a very classic 80s way, in the beginning of a wrestling match at Madison Square Garden. It is very 80s wrestling match, because it's a bunch of barrel-chested dudes and Speedos throwing each other around a ring. It's pretty spectacular. The crowd's there. There's a guy with a painted hockey mask who's yelling. And not like a Jason Voorhees mask or a Casey Jones hockey mask. This is like that old classic plastic hockey mask that has like the weird lines in it, and it's you can probably find them, but it's just like you can see it was a marker that was put on there. By the way, if I didn't say this already, the production value of this movie is piss poor at best. It's pretty bad. There's a part where Connor gets lifted off the ground during what they call the quickening. You can see the wires. It's pretty rough. blatantly too. It's not like it's like a shadow of one. Now it's on camera. You can see the wire. It's pretty rough. But it doesn't matter. It's pretty awesome. So he's watching this. He has having flashbacks to a battle that he ended up dying in. So the whole movie is told his whole history is told in flashbacks to the Scottish Highlands in 1536, starting in 1536 when he dies and gets resurrected, I guess you'd say. But in this first part, he's getting flashbacks of it because of the violence going on in the wrestling ring. He gets this sense. It's kind of like Spidey sense. When another immortal is nearby, there's this painful full body shock that happens to you. And if you live long enough, you get kind of used to it. So you can kind of, you don't have to go, oh God. So he feels this. He gets pulled out of his daydream. And I guess this guy's next to him yelling at him. And he gets up to leave. The guy's like, where are you going? So then he goes and he's walking through the parking garage trying to get out of there. Senses the guy again. The dude come up behind him, totally had a chance to ambush him, but he didn't. He said, con him, McLeod. And then they proceed to sword fight in the most ridiculous sword fight scene ever. And Connor wins. He chops the guy's head off. So I should tell you that right now. So the way this works is you're immortal unless your head is removed from your body. So it has to be fully removed from your body. Otherwise, you will heal. The worse the wound, the longer it'll take. The older, if I remember the lore properly, the proper one, the longer you live and the more powerful you are, the faster you heal, even from mortal wounds. So you can be stabbed in the heart if you're old enough and powerful enough. Like you've taken enough other immortals, power, you can heal fairly quickly. But it still hurts. It's not like you're not invulnerable to pain. If you get stabbed through said heart, it will still hurt like a motherfucker, for a very long time. And if that happens to you, and if you're fighting someone, that gives them a really good chance to lop your head off while you're like, oh God, my heart. So he gets in this sword fight with this guy. He pulls out a katana sword, which is dope. I've always wanted the replica for this sword because it looks so rad. It's got an ivory handle that's carved into a dragon's head. It's got a gold hilt on it, and then obviously the katana blade with the curve and the bend in it and everything like that. And it is a folded steel sword. In the lore of this, it was created a couple hundred years before the Japanese started using that method. So that's pretty substantial. It's supposed to show the history of it, the fact that the mortals were around before and they kind of helped develop technology through the past and things like that, which is what Sean Connery wants to do. He wants to better mankind by helping and passing on knowledge. But then you have bad guys like the Kurgan, played by Clancy Jones, who's out to eliminate everybody to basically get the quickening. So the quickening, the winner of a fight between two immortals, when the other one's beheaded, the winner receives the quickening. The quickening is later movies, a lightning strike that comes down from the sky and erupts into the body, pulling in the power from the other people. In the first movie, it's terrible CG glowing around, and it looks like lightning that jumps around everything and then eventually dissipates in the sky, and then what looks like this shock, hurt look on the winner's body, and he drops his sword and shakes and blah, blah, blah. Later on, it was done a lot better. So there's that. Let's see here. So Connor fights him, defeats him in one of the worst battles ever. There's a lot of battles in this one are pretty fucking terrible, but it's just a really fun movie in general. Let's see. Then he has more flashbacks. He gets arrested because they think he's the one that killed the guy, because there's now the bodies don't go away. They are just headless bodies. So that's pretty fucking terrible. The lore. I was talking about the lore. So the whole premise of this, the more immortals you kill and absorb the power, the stronger you get. You never age no matter what. Until at the end of this movie, they explain it as once he's the last one, which comes down to him and the Kurgan. Whoever wins will take the final quickening, and it's a massive one, and it's supposed to basically end your immortality, but gives you vast knowledge. So becoming immortal means you can't have children, because nothing, you stop growing. And you stop any life giving stuff, I guess, is the way they look at it. So he the quickening itself is the gathering of all that knowledge that you're supposed to be able to gain the knowledge of the person you defeated, making you smarter and more wise and all that fun stuff. Obviously, an evil person will use that in a bad way, the Kurgan. Then a good person would use that to help others by stopping the bad ones. If you really think about it, though, as the saying goes, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. A good person would take the knowledge and the power they gain, and they would use it for good. A bad person would want to keep gaining more and more until the final one. And I don't know if any of them knew that once there's only one, there can be only one. Once there is only one, I don't know if they know the fact that their immortality ends, and they then have aspects to all the knowledge that anybody that has ever passed in that immortal run knew. But they also have the ability to understand people in even different languages. They can understand math and science and language and all these different things. Their brains just boom, maxed out to 1,010%. And I don't know if anyone knew that or not, or if that's why the Kurgan wanted it so bad. Other than the fact that I don't think he knew he was going to be not immortal anymore. But anyways, he wanted all that power and knowledge. Spoiler alert, he did not get it. So the whole thing is they actually get super strength. So they can actually chop through steel with swords. They can punch through walls. And this is demonstrated in the fight between the Kurgan and Ramirez, which is Sean Connery's character, Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, which I'm going to refer to him as Ramirez from now on. When they're fighting inside Connor's new home, which Connor's not at, it's just Sean Connery, Ramirez and Connor's wife, McLeod's wife, and they're having a talk about his past and things like that. And the Kurgan shows up, busts through the door. They get in a big fight as they're going through. And then one of the best parts is when you first see the Kurgan in modern time, 1985, he has this gnarly scar going across his neck that basically literally like it splits his neck in half. And you actually get to see where that comes from. And that comes from Sean Connery's character, Ramirez, who at that time has the katana sword that Connor later uses. He gets bestowed it after, spoiler alert, Ramirez dies. When he cuts through it, it's so quick, it just cuts, and he's like, blah, blah, but he heals, so he kind of starts talking, but it still has a replicable damage because it doesn't fully heal. It just heals enough for you to do things. But kind of fucked up his voice and stuff too because of scar tissue. It doesn't just go to back to feeling like being good. You should technically have all these scars on your body because it's, well, it just scars over real quick. It heals like you normally would heal, but, you know, fast and in possible ways, like being stabbed through the heart and that sort of stuff. So he breaks in. There's a big training montage, but I'm not going to go through that. He breaks in. They get in a fight. They're going through. He's getting pissed off, and he's swinging hard as he can. And when Sean Connery blocks the sword, sparks fly, which is pretty cool. And if he doesn't, and the Kurgan misses him and hits a wall, the wall starts to crumble. He's actually breaking through this big stone house, which when I was little made me think this house is built like complete garbage. But you got to realize he's super strong and he's literally like shattering this building, and it does fall apart. And so they go back and forth. The Kurgan eventually gets Sean Connery, beheads him, takes the power. He falls. You think he's dead, but then he pops up and he grabs Connor's wife, and says hello, blah blah blah. And he, because he says to Ramirez as he's dying, he's like, "When I'm done with you, I'm gonna take your woman. I'm gonna take the woman." And he goes, "Who is she?" Something like that. And he goes, "She's mine." He goes, "Well, I'll take her after then," or something like that. In that way, he basically asks who she is. Sean Connery, his character Ramirez, lies, says it's her, she's his. And then instead of killing her, he basically rapes her. You don't see it; they don't show it on the TV, and the movie. But it's alluded to he's gonna do very bad things. Well, if you see her alive again, you're like, well, she didn't die, so that's good. And you don't really know what happens. I spoiled that part, by the way. You don't find out she got raped until later. Then you see, you get, because the whole thing is at that point, Ramirez is telling Connor that he needs to let her go. He needs to leave her because he's never going to age. He can't give her children. She's going to age and die in front of him. And it's going to hurt him. And he knows because it happened to him. So he's trying to save him from that pain. When he dies, Connor kind of goes against that, and he stays with her until she dies of old age, and he does suffer that heartache. And she makes this deathbed thing, saying to him, "I want you to do one thing. I want you to live and remember me and light a candle for me on my birthday every year." So to keep that love alive. She passes away. He is distraught, and that's pretty much the last time you really get a flashback scene. Other than little recollection things like, little scenes that kind of flash back and forth, but no more history lessons after that. The Kurgan is in modern time. He's a punk rock, which is pretty fucking hilarious. Because those were in the 80s, those were like the scum of the earth people, is, you know, all leather and spikes and safety pins, blah, blah, blah. Again, there's some pretty terrible makeup in this movie too, because the Kurgan gets noticed, so a sketch of him is in the papers, so he has to shave his head and disguise himself, and so he does shave his head, which you can tell it's a ball cap because it wrinkles up when he turns his head in certain ways, and Clancy Brown totally hams it up in this movie. It's fucking amazing. Plays a nutball, who is the Kurgan, by the way. I guess I should have really mentioned. I mentioned he was the antagonist, but he is the Kurgan. During the disguise thing, he actually takes safety pins and puts it through the scar to cover it up, so you can't tell it's there. I'm like, that's actually going to draw more attention to it, but you do you, Kurgan, because you're insane. They have a really good banter inside of a church. So holy places are off limits. I don't know why. It's something they agreed on. I don't know if that affects the quickening. So if you kill an immoral there, I don't know I guess it doesn't count. You don't get the point, I guess. I don't know how that works. They don't really, it's just, they say it's an agreement they have. All holy places are off limits. So when the Kurgan confronts Connor in the church and actually confesses the fact that he raped, his wife, not knowing it was his wife until he saw the look on Connor's face, then realized, oh shit, that was actually your wife that Ramirez lied about, and you didn't know because she never told you. This is fantastic, which set Connor off the fucking edge, and he was definitely going to fight him. But the Kurgan wanted to make sure that he did, because Connor just recently got a new lady in his life who is a forensics expert, and oddly enough, a metal expert too, who is antagonizing him through the movie about these evidence because she believes he's involved somehow with this this what they call samurai, which is the sword she's looking for, because she finds trace metals in a beam at Madison Square Garden that Connor left when he hit it after he decapitated the dude. A sword got embedded in there, which is, again, showing the strength of the Highlander, the fact that a solid cement pillar that is literally a structural pillar was chopped into by the sword, saying, oh, the sword's really strong, but also so is the wielder. They do an all right job of it. Like, the Kurgan definitely shows off his strength, because when he stabs this dude, this vigilante dude that just got done shooting him, in the gut, lifts him up and holds him in the air on the sword and then tosses him off like he's nothing. He also rips the roof of a car open when he hijacks it, which is pretty awesome. So they confront each other. Kurgan's like, you know what? I think he needs a little more motivation. I'm going to kidnap his new girlfriend. So he does that. Drives recklessly around after killing one of Connor's kind of friends that he's made a friend, an immortal friend he's made kind of his bond with over the years. They agree not to fight each other. Just like him and Ramirez did. And of course, Ramirez was killed. So is this guy by the Kurgan. And then so they go to confront each other, and it's on top of this rooftop, and it's just this knockdown, drag out sword fight. He tries to ambush Connor when Connor goes to rescue the girl who's tied up on this neon sign on the building, up on top of this structure on the building. Connor gets the best of him. He falls. He decides, I'm going to take down this whole tower, mainly to kill her. So he starts chopping through the beams. Connor has to come stop him, and they're fighting. It starts to collapse. Part of it falls and breaks a water, one of those big wooden barrel things from the roof. Water fills there, and the electricity is bouncing off, coming off the sign and going through the water. And you can see that it's not affecting them, but it's like shooting off and arcing off of them through the water and their swords. It's pretty cool. It could have used some better special effects, but I'll let it pass because it was 1985 and that shit was hard to do back then. 1986 actually, was when it was released. So there's a big fight. They end up falling through a skylight, which is pretty cool, because they land and they crash down. They slowly get up. They have some more sword fighting. She somehow got in there, and then she watched it happen. And then Connor outdoes the Kurgan, cuts him up a bunch of times, eventually chops his head off and gets the quickening because it is the last one. It erupts, and there's all these animals and death stuff made of lightning that are buzzing as he lifts off the ground. And he absorbs it, and he lands. You find out that he's with her now, and they're off, and it jumps to them driving through Scotland, through the Highlands. She's saying, oh, this is where it all began. He's like, for me, it did. And then he explains to her that with the quickening, he has all this knowledge, and he can communicate with all these people from around the world, and he can help them with all these different things, all these problems they're having. He's mortal now, so he can have kids with her. And that he's the last of the kind. That's supposed to be the end of the whole thing. That's how it ends, right? Well, they needed to come with a sequel, and we'll go over that again next time I do the when I do the sequels in a month or two, I think. I don't have it planned. I don't have a month just planned out yet, but it will be in the next couple months. It'll be either June, July, or August. I'm not too sure yet. When I want to do it, because I have to figure out the rest of the movies. I only have a couple of them. But anyways, so what makes this movie awesome, besides just the ridiculousness and the super... It's a movie... The story isn't great, but if you think about the stuff that's going on in it, it has very many layers to it. It's a very heavy movie, for the most part. It's a very sci-fi-ish movie. One of the best parts is there's a bunch of original songs made for the soundtrack and the score by Queen. They also did the theme song for the TV show, because they use one of those from here. But you have a kind of magic, Princes of the Universe, which plays more into the second one, and we'll go into that then, because of the way they changed the story. They have Who Wants to Live Forever. And I think that's it. Yeah. Prince of the Universe was the song used for the Highlander television show series opener. By the way, if you were wondering, the title sequence they use is the Princes of the Universe by Queen. But yeah, I think that's it for this week's episode. We were talking about the Highlander and or Highlander. It's not the Highlander, it's Highlander. But anyways, we'll go over more awesome nostalgic 80s action movies the rest of the month. But that's it for this week's episode. That's it for the awesome Cody. I have been Cody, and remember, let's be awesome.